We're gonna get started. While people are coming in, the ones that are here, is there anything you guys want to ask or share or comment on from this morning? Yes.
Going up the stairs reminds me of those cartoons where they climb the mountains and see their guru.
Right, yes. It is like that, one step at a time. It's a good practice to have. Oh, yeah. There's a funny story about that. There's a lot of jokes we could tell about the guru at the top of the mountain. There's a story about this mother and son. It could be a Jewish mother or not, but it usually is a Jewish mother. And the son is off seeking enlightenment and seeking to find himself. And he goes off to the Himalayas and doesn't come back. And the mom is desperate for finding her son. So she retraces his footsteps. And, you know, she's trying to figure out where did he go? And where might he have gone? And they all say, I was thinking what you said, she hears that there's this guru. He might have gone to this guru that everybody goes to at the top of the mountains in the Himalayas that goes to seek advice. But you're only allowed to ask three question with three words. You only have to say three words to them. And this person is so enlightened and so wise that, you know, there's lines up and down the mountain, and it's a whole industry getting people up to see this guru. And she's, you know, she wants to find out what happened to her son. And so she chooses to embark on that. You know, it's in some remote village, and yet there are people trekking there. Telling a long story short, because more people come back. And so she finally gets there, and she's going up the mountain, and she gets coached, you know, look, you're only going to have a few seconds. Make sure you know what, you know, you're going to say. And so she gets there, and there's a whole ritual. You got to bow and do all of this come stuff. And she finally makes it to the feet of this guru. And she looks up at him and says, Sheldon, come home. So that's that story about the guru at the top of the mountain. Now I'll tell you another story that you'll laugh. It's a little blasphemous, but what can I tell you? And I'll tell it in a clean way. But I shared with you, I lived in Israel for a number of years, and I had a center there for mind-body medicine. And I talked a lot about the effect of the Holocaust epigenetically, that people carry, bear the brunt of trauma of their generation. So in our culture, this is Black History Month. Obviously, slavery still lives in the genes based on the effect. If you're Jewish, the Holocaust and the history of Jewish people, if you're Irish, Catholic, whatever, we carry, it's inherited in our genetics, actually. So that's bad news and good news. Good news, we can heal it with love and compassion. So the story is someone is trying to study peace. And they're getting a PhD in peace studies at the UN. So they have to do a practicum somewhere. And well, where better to go than to Israel, the seat of the three religions, the Buddha, the Jewish, the Muslim, and the Christian in Jerusalem, all centered at the Wailing Wall, where people go. And so she's going to go, and she goes. She hears that there's this one person who's been praying for peace at the Wailing Wall his whole life. He's like 90 years old now. Some name like Moshe Schwartz or something like that, right? And he's a religious Jew, and he's at the wall in the Jewish faith, religious faith, there's morning, afternoon, and evening prayers, like in many different faiths. And they go to the wall, and you see them there, right? And they're davening, and right there is also the holy sites of Christianity and holy sites of the Muslims. So she goes, she finds this guy, Moshe, and says, can I interview you about peace? Because this is my studies, and I want to try to understand what's going on here. And he says, well, wait, come back to me at the end of the day after I finish my daily prayers. And he comes back and says, so can you, is it true you've been praying for peace every day your whole life since you're 5 years old, like 85 years already? And he says, yeah, and morning, noon, and night. And she says to him, so what's that like to pray every day for peace? He says, what do you think it's like? It's like talking to a wall. Okay, so I know nothing about medicine, healing, or the world. It is what it is, okay? That's equanimity. Things are as they are, not as you or I wish them to be. Then we have to decide how to be with it. But first we got to face the reality. This is it. This is the way it is. You're going to tell them if they have something, they're going to speak with the microphone.
Right? Just a quick announcement. Well, first, welcome back. You made it. And about the mics, it would be really helpful if you don't mind waiting, if you're asking a question or making a comment, for the mic to, for the Sarah, the volunteer, to pass the mic to you. Apologies for not mentioning this earlier. We are recording this session, and it will only be available to anyone who attended today. And Amit here, our lovely volunteer, is recording, will be editing and sharing that with you all once that is ready. And another thing, if you can also turn off or silence your phones, that would be very helpful as well.
Okay, thank
else?
You, Vivian.
I think that's all.
So this afternoon, we'll do some meditation, but there are some specific things I'd like to share with you. Can we have another volunteer to help and erase the board? Thank you very much. I don't want to... Thank you. So I want to teach you two things that are very practical in the context of what we've talked about. And I want to do some sharing. And then I think it will be helpful for you to pick one person next to you, doesn't matter. And you're just going to tell each other your story for a few minutes. That's about it. And you're going to listen to each other. And I'll read to you why that may be important in the context of just hearing the story without someone needing to fix you or cure it or come up with an answer. Because that's really what is the main essence that I'm sharing with you here. Remember, the truth liberates, not your effort to be free. So there are a few things I want to read in that regard, if I can find it. But let me recommend, this is an excellent, excellent, excellent book. It's one of the best books ever. A Path with Heart, The Guide to the Perils and Promises of Spiritual Life, Jack Kornfield, who's also a meditation teacher and psychologist. So this is a really, really fantastic book. And it's a companion for therapy, for healing, for spirituality. It's just a really good book, so I'm recommending that to you. Okay. And then Pema Chodron, The Wisdom of No Escape. Okay. Now, what I wanted to read is a few things. You guys have your handouts, correct? So let me go through them. I want to get this not out of the way, but we only have an hour and a half. I have to end on time, and I want to make sure you have the information. So I'm going to do some teachings before we go into experiential. Is that okay? All right. So this thing, meditation, be kind to yourself. The third handout. We're going to practice it, but I want to go over it because it's really, really simple. And I think it's important to have an understanding of why it's simple. And so this is from Kristen Neff, who's popularized self-compassion. So remember her name. She's a psychologist. Done a lot of research on that, integrating mindfulness and compassion. But there's open to the part that says, that shows her picture and says, the first phrase, this is a moment of suffering. I'm going to guide you in this. Okay, so I'm going to say it, then I'm going to guide you, and then reinforce it. So this is the practice. It says, this is a moment of suffering. That's the words. Like, right now, my edge, people have shared, my brain, my mind, my struggle, my fear, my illness, my relative, whatever that may be. It's an edge of pain. It's an edge of struggle. It's an edge of suffering. And I've shared with you, the question of how can I be with it mindfully and compassionately. This is the self-compassion part. And this is changing our relationship to it. When you change the way you look at things, what you look at changes. When you change how you be with them, they change. The journey of discovery is not seeking new landscapes. It's seeing with new eyes. You were asking a very touching, important, deep, painful question. And the challenge is there's no new landscape there. They're seeing it with new eyes. Opening to it in a way that you can grapple in a healing way and see the choices and the liberation that will come at the heart of how painful that is, of what you're going through. You follow what I'm saying? And anyone could easily want to jump in with you and try to help you get out and figure it out. And that's not wrong, but it won't help you go through that process. And the example is the butterfly and the caterpillar, right? Or the child who has a little bit of a fever and we're giving them antibiotics continually. All we're doing is destroying their immune system, so later in life they end up with yeast infections or their tubes coming out of their ears. Because you need to struggle a little bit in life. It's part of actually one of the ways we grow as human beings, physically, biologically, in a whole host of ways to strengthen the immune system in different aspects. So think of that caterpillar that you meet along the way where they can't get out of the chrysalis and the wing is like struggling and you cut it open and you don't realize you've crippled that caterpillar for life, will never become a butterfly. Because that struggle is what makes the wings strong enough to be able to fly. And if you take yourself out of your pain too quickly or in a way and you're either pushing it down or trying to get rid of it and not coming to a wise, compassionate relationship with it, with the seven intentions, you're not allowing what the growth and the learning and the healing that must come. Okay? Because that's the real challenge. Compassionate action out of our suffering. The Gandhis, the Martin Luther Kings, the Mandelas, the Stephen Hawkings, we each have our own. How do we face that part of our humanity? Not as problem, but part of the reality of that's what our mind is. It drives us crazy. That's what the heart is, it breaks. That's what the body is, it gets sick and has ailments and things that we need to diagnose and treat. None of this is mutual excuse. So the first is a contemplation to give yourself the compassion you need. You put your hands on your heart. You breathe in, just doing it quickly. This is a moment of suffering, number one. The truth, this is a moment of suffering. I'll guide you momentarily. Number two, suffering is part of life. The first teaching of the Buddha, New York Insight Meditation Center, the teachings of Buddhism. That's why we're sitting here. Because it was passed on. Differently now in the West than before, but these are the same teachings. When we study the CDL people, we study every year, we study the suttas and all of that, and I'm not a big ritual person, I'm not a big Buddhist in that sense. One of the things Jack said once, don't be a Buddhist, be a Buddha. So I've never been a good Buddhist, I've never been a good anything on that score, etc. But the challenge is seeing the essence of what the teachings are and where this comes from. And so that's the second one. Suffering is part of life. And then the third is, may I be kind to myself in this moment? May I give myself the compassion I need? That's it. And in that, we're kicking and screaming, get me out of here, but we're missing that relationship. If you remember the quote from Rilke, parts of us are scared and helpless and need our love. So close your eyes for a second. Because this is what you're going to be doing with each other. You're just going to see, oh, this is just suffering. It's real. I'm not going to shut it down. And I'm not going to, I got to fix this. This is part of life. This is universal. So close your eyes. And because you're going to share briefly, just with each other. Tell each other, like, my brain's driving me crazy. Whatever it may be. Not just you, everybody. You're not the only one with the brain. We're all in the same boat. So put your hand on your heart and feel the warmth of your own hands. Just feel that. Or someplace on your body that feels soothing and comforting in your belly or your face. You're being gentle with yourself. Breathe deeply in and out. For whatever reason you may have chosen to come here today, whether you got in touch with something different or whatever it may be that you want to learn from, be with, struggling with, in pain of, suffering from, let's acknowledge, how can I be with you? To give myself compassion that I need and deserve. This is a moment of suffering. This hurts. I'm in pain. This is hard. I don't have an answer. I don't know how to get rid of this. I don't know what to do. I'm in pain and I'm suffering. It's a moment of suffering. Suffering is part of life. It's universal. It's not just my suffering. I'm not a victim. I'm not the only person. Doesn't make it better or worse. Everybody in this room has pain and suffering. We're all human. It's part of life. It's universal. May I be kind to myself in this moment. May I change how I be with it and how I relate to it. Doesn't mean I don't still want to figure it out. I still don't want to change it. I still don't want to heal it. Still don't want to be free from it. But can I bring this compassion in relationship to it? May I give myself the compassion I need? Maybe it's a part of me. I'm a grown man. I'm a grown woman. I know I'm smart. I have all these parts of me that are doing fantastic in life, but this part is scared and wounded and needs love. May I give myself the compassion that I need? This is medicine. This is healing medicine. Loving yourself, being kind to yourself, holding a scared little boy or girl in your arms with a heart of compassion, giving it to yourself. The same compassion you give to your friends and your children and your grandchildren and your relatives and your neighbors in the world and the earth, we need to give it to ourselves. As a doctor, I'm going to say, trust me, I'm a doctor. This is changing your brain, neuroplasticity. This is changing your immune system to promote more healing. And it's actually affecting your mitochondria and your epigenetic structure at the cellular level. The genes are affected by your consciousness. Bruce Lipton, Biology of Belief, The Power of the Mind. So this is healing. This is medicine. And we want to give it to ourselves. We want to give it to each other. So when you're going to listen to each other for just a few minutes, you're just going to be there present and saying, I hear you. I care. I can see your pain. It's my pain. I'd love to fix you and cure you and give you an answer, but let me first love you and accept you and be present with you. Because I know that helping you be with the truth of your pain may be the deepest gift I can give you. Then, with compassionate action, you could find wise choices as to solve the problem. But first, it is compassionate action arising out of self-love. And then, as with Mrs. Jones, we heal the parts of us that feel we don't deserve it and we're not worthy. Because we were wounded or hurt or abused or abandoned or whatever the pain was in our lives now or from our childhood. No one is to blame. We're not victims blaming and getting caught in it. We just want to see the truth of it in a healing way. May I remember that I am worthy of compassion. May I give myself the same compassion I would give to a friend or loved one. This is a good starting point for healing. Letting go of needing to fix or cure or change. So hold that compassion. And our practice is 24/7. It doesn't happen just when we sit. You can practice compassion for yourself and others when you look around the room. And you can practice mindfulness every step you take up and down the stairs. Be present with it. Thich Nhat Hanh. One step at a time. His wonderful book, Peace is Every Step. So hold that, and I'm going to read to you a poem from Thich Nhat Hanh on compassion. And this is the universality of it. This is part of life, if you've heard it or not. This is a poem called Please Call Me by My True Names. Thich Nhat Hanh, the monk, from French monk, but Vietnamese. And that's his poem, Please Call Me by My True Names. Don't say that I will depart tomorrow. Even today, I am still arriving. Look deeply. Every second, I am arriving to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with still fragile wings, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I am the mayfly metamorphosing on the surfaces of the river, and I am the bird that swoops down to swallow the mayfly. I am the frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond, and I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. And I am the pirate, not yet able to keep my heart open, that rapes a young girl. And I'm that young girl, unable to bear the trauma, that throws herself into the water to drown from the pain of her loss, of her trauma. Please call me by my true names so that my heart can remain open . The door stays open, the door of compassion. That's Thich Nhat Hanh. Please call me by my true names. So one other thing I wanted to share with you, and then we'll have you guys break up. It doesn't matter who you're with. You're just going to spend 5 minutes. You're going to tell each other your story. But I want to share with you the context of that. By the way, that poem, the first part of it was the poem. The next part was from my memory. So you might want to go check it out online, because I left out a few parts because I didn't have the other part of the poem. Please call me by my true names, Thich Nhat Hanh. Okay? So, now, this is another book I'm recommending to you in the context of the teachings this day. And the book is called In the Lap of the Buddha by Gavin Harrison. And what I'm going to read to you is an interview that he had with Tricycle Magazine. Are you familiar with Tricycle Magazine? It's a Buddhist magazine, Buddhist publication. Tricycle, monthly magazine, which is integrating the teachings of Buddhism with wisdom. And as I shared from you at the beginning, for me, in how I understand the teachings is compassionate action to apply them in our lives. And one way is to face our difficulties. Not to get rid of them, but to face them and to welcome them as our teacher. Gavin Harrison, In the Lap of the Buddha. We're going to go over the rest of the handouts after you do your exercise and some more readings. But I wanted to do this before you work with each other for a few minutes, okay? Because someone mentioned, I think you mentioned early on, childhood trauma. And if I get your email addresses, you can send me an email, you have my info, stuff comes up for you or whatever. I want to send you, or you can go online to Mindful Magazine, the wonderful article by Thich Nhat Hanh also on healing the inner child. And the context there that we meditate not to stuff our pain, not to get peaceful, but to open to the truth of it, to weep in practice, not just to reduce our stress, but to open to the, you know, full catastrophe. That's what John Kabat-Zinn talks about, open to the full catastrophe. So this article encapsulates a lot of what I've been sharing with you. And what I've been attempting to teach is in the lap of the Buddha, right? So, tricycle. I think that one of the reasons your book, In the Lap of the Buddha, has had an impact is that it is a very explicitly told tale of transformation through suffering. Right? Transformation through it. But it must be difficult to keep telling the story without identifying with it. How engaged do you feel with your story? So just that you understand, when people are asking questions, it's not like I don't want to give them an answer per se. I don't want to have them being caught still in the story. Whether it's Mrs. Jones who needs to lose 100 pounds or whatever suffering we're carrying, the attachment to the story can really cause more suffering. And this is nothing to do on this or Buddhism. When I first got to Connecticut as a doctor, I gave a lecture to the Lung Association because I had experience of treating children and parents with asthma by changing their diet and avoiding sugar and food allergies and helping them deal with stress and strengthen the immune system. And I didn't cure asthma, but I helped them not have it, if that makes sense. And I give this lecture to this audience, and these are people suffering with asthma. And I don't have the cure. This is an approach. This is another way of exploring healing, right? In addition, you know, I never tell anybody, don't go to your doctor, or don't take your medicine, or don't get a diagnosis, or I say, do all of that and let's heal. Let's see if something else, because if you're in my office, something's missing. That hasn't been happened yet, okay? And I said, I was giving this encouragement that you could heal asthma. And the guy raised his hand. I remember this, like it was like blasting in my ears, and he was angry at me. He said to me, you can't heal my asthma. I've had asthma for 40 years and I can't heal it. I can't. What are you telling me you can heal my asthma? And I made a comment at the time, which is, I said, asthma is pretty easy to treat. It's the my part that's going to be hard. Because we're attached to it. You're not your diagnosis. You're not what's wrong with you. But the degree to which we are caught in that only, and that's not to say Stephen Hawking was curing his amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. That's not my point. But it's how we relate to it. And so if I'm seeing that patient trying to help him cure his asthma, I have to help him see how attached he is to it, not because he's glad he has it, but because he's been identified with it for so long, he's going to be gone as an asthma doctor for 30 years. So we develop this conditioning, not because it's wrong or bad, because we go to our arthritis doctor, and it's almost like we get stamped. And we relate to it as if it's ours, right? So what are the three characteristics of life that we're talking about here that we want to see in our practice? One, things change. Why do we suffer? Because we're attached and we hold on, and it's going to be pulled out from our arms, and as long as we hold on, we're craving, and we don't, that causes our suffering. Because impermanence, things change. Right? The X today becomes the Y tomorrow. That's number one. Two, we've talked about it all day, the truth of suffering. I'm not making it up, we're all here. And we could go take out 30 more people from the street and bring them here. We can bring all of the monks here, and we could bring all of the teachers here, and we could bring all of the psycho-spiritual thought leaders of Sound True here, and they're all going to tell you the same thing, the truth of suffering. Nobody escapes. Nobody's, and it isn't you. Even though it is your pain, you're special, but you're not unique, and you're unique, but you're not special, however you want to look at it. You got what you got. Everybody gets something. It's kind of like comes with territory. You get a mind, it's going to drive you crazy. You got a heart, it's going to break. You got a body, something's going to go wrong sooner or later. I'm not telling tales out of school. This is the reality. And the thing that has been the most biggest challenge for me is how we all act like that's not supposed to happen. Like this shouldn't be happening. It happens to all of us. You get your stuff, I get my stuff. And the only question is, what will I learn from it? So back to Gavin Harrison. So he's talking about how engaged he is with his story, right? So we said, my knee. As long as it's my knee, forget it. If there's just the sensation in my body and it's painful, okay, I can be with that. But when it's my knee and I won't ever walk again, now. So, presently more disengaged than I've ever been. The whole area of abuse most often feels like a non-issue now. I'm not for one moment assuming that I've transcended it, but the experience, the pattern of conditioning, is now dealt with very effectively in meditation practice when it arises, when my buttons are pushed. Now that process, if you know, Tara Brach has popularized this, so this is the second two, the take-homes from today are the seven intentions and that compassion practice. And what I'm going to share with you now, which is really the resilience, and it's in the handouts that you have too. It's called From Pain to Rain. It's a very simple mnemonic. The R is recognize it. Acknowledge it. See it clearly. That's what mindfulness does. Help you see the truth. This is what's happening. This is it. Recognize it. The second, accept it. Acknowledge it. Hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a X, or I'm a Y, or I'm in pain, or I have this diagnosis, but I'm not, it's not me. I'm accepting and I'm acknowledging. I have awareness of it. So I have to recognize. So when you're meditating, this is another phrase that you might like, you have to name it to tame it. You have to know what's going on. I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm frustrated. So instead of getting caught in a story, you step back. You don't detach from it, but you're not stuck in it. So every time I answered a question here, it was an effort to not get caught in the story, as important as the story is, so you could get a little space from it to be able to see it, recognize it, see how a part of you is caught in it, and accept it. Then you do the I word, pain to rain. Recognize, accept it. The I word is mindfulness. Inquire about it. What's it like, which we're going to do later? How does it show up in my body, this struggle, this pain, this frustration? How does it show up in my body? How does it show up in my heart? What feelings are connected to it? How does it show up in my mind? Not with an attitude of get rid of it, and not with an attitude to stay stuck in it, because that's what's causing all the suffering. Those two things. Get out of here, I don't want you. Got to get rid of you, and then I'll be okay. Or, I don't know what to do, I'm stuck in it. I can't seem to find the middle way. That's the Buddhist path, the middle way. Yes?
So investigate is not like, say, a psychotherapeutic way.
Well, we're talking meditation now. Meditation and psychotherapy kind of go together. Why I want you to talk to each other, because sometimes you can't be with your own suffering by yourself. You need somebody there to sit with you and say, I hear you. You're not crazy. This is really hard. I hear you. I get it. And it lets me be present in a way that, oh my God, how do I get you out of your pain? So I hear you. And if we can both be with it, together we'll find compassionate action that moves us in the right direction, free from it. Now, psychotherapy is important too. Okay? That's a whole other subject. So I'm not meaning to minimize it, but I don't really have the time to fully go into that. Well, this is the context of mindfulness mostly, that I see it and I'm inquiring, this thing I'm calling arthritis, you know how many patients will come to me with arthritis and they've never closed their eyes to even experience what it's like, they just say get rid of it because it's this name and it's pain. Close your eyes, what's your experience of it? Oh, I don't have to be so afraid of it. Oh, I can be with it. Oh, my relationship changes when I inquire and I look at it and be with it. Change how you look at it and change how you be with it. So the recognize it, the accept it, the investigate it, inquire about it, and the end is to kind of nurture yourself, the self-compassion, your own natural goodness, right? because we tend to get hopeless, helpless, and worthless. So not you or anybody else, we're all the same. How we deal with the parts of us that are struggling that we can't get out of because we're like the hamster running around in circles, we feel hopeless. I don't have the answer. We feel helpless because I haven't been able to figure it out. And we feel worthless because we may not deserve. So the healing isn't trying to get out. The healing is how not to feel hopeless, helpless, and worthless and be empowered. What I'm empowering you with is that you have a choice how to choose to relate to this stuff. We can always talk later about what to do and how to fix it and what's wise, but I always delay that because I'm wanting to help you see this first. Do you understand what I'm saying? Very important. Not that we don't want to look for solutions or decide whether I should say this or who or when, but first, come to terms with that. Okay? So that's pain to rain. Not real complicated. And it's really helpful. Another tool that helps with that, and I'm going to finish this reading, is this comes from just seeing what I shared before. It's like a part of me, right? It's not me. It's not mine. So imagine a part of me is hurt. A part of me is angry. A part of me is sad. Not I'm sad. I'm angry. When it becomes the I, it becomes so global and universal, you're kind of just digging your own. Instead of, no, there's a part of me that's really stuck. That's just a part of you. That's not all of who you are. But when we own it as all of me, it's very hard to get any breathing room or space from it. And that's the whole key. The whole key is that breathing room, is that psychic space to free yourself from. Let me finish this. He goes on to say, but the experience, the pattern of conditioning is now dealt with very effectively in meditation practice when it arises, when my buttons are pushed. So here's the essence of today. When you feel the fear and you feel the rage in meditation, when I say that people go be with your struggle, I'm not saying be with your struggle, and I'm saying be with your struggle, pain to rain. When you feel the fear and you feel the rage in meditation, there's no storyline. There's the space, the psychic space, not to be caught in the story that you're telling. The story's real. The diagnosis of arthritis is real, but when the story takes over the experience, there's no way to work with it other than get rid of it. And that doesn't allow for a beginner's mind or something to learn or some shifting to take place, to see it with new eyes. There's just the experience of, this is meditation, the arising and passing away of the emotions and the sensations in the body and seeing how they relate to one another. There's no miasma. Well, if there's miasma, you have asthma for 40 years. If there's just, what's that experience like and how can I be with it? And can I open to it and, you know, not get rid of it or cure it all or nothing, but how do I relate to it in a wiser way? Right? All the examples I'm giving are people who related to it and took compassionate action. And in that seeing, the abused person becomes less and less a victim of what's going on because you realize, and this is also what I've been teaching you all day, hopefully, that you have choices that weren't available to you before. You can see it with new eyes. Mindfulness and compassion are different choices, different resources, different ways of seeing and being that you can choose to bring to yourself and your issues and your struggles and your pains and your suffering, if you choose. He then says, the Buddha said, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. You've heard the word liberation, right? What's liberation? How do we get free? The addict, you know how they get free? By doing pain to rain, by recognizing I'm an addict and being willing to face that pain. Willing to go to the heart of the truth of that pain is how they first transform. Now, let's not wait until we're all suffering. There's different degrees and levels of suffering and pain. He then goes on to say, you become less and less a victim of what's going on because you got a little space from it, right? You're not identified with it. That's why I'm not a fan of diagnoses. Don't deny the diagnosis, but that's not what you're always what you're dealing with if you want to treat the whole person. So one doctor can treat the diagnosis, another person has to help you see how it fits into a much larger picture of who you are, which sometimes you can't see when you're caught in your diagnosis. And so I see a lot of people who can heal, but not if they're attached to their asthma. If that makes any sense, I'm hoping it does. So this is what he said. You now have choices that weren't available before. Having choices is a liberating experience. That's what frees you. That's what the Buddha taught. That's my interpretation. Having a choice. You're human. You got a choice. How do you want to deal with your suffering? You got it. You can't run away from it. You can't avoid it. You can't deny it. You're not going to get rid of it. You got it. You might as well learn how to deal with it. And I think that's what the Buddha's teachings are. Okay. Having choices is a living, liberating experience. But those choices are coming out of a way of dealing with it that has nothing to do with Gavin the infant who was abused or at boarding school beaten with a hose pipe and that sort of thing. Meditation practice is about the experience of what is, of what's going on. That is what is liberating. And this truth is quite beyond the story. So we meditate not to reinforce our story. I'm meditating to get rid of my story. We meditate to free ourselves from the story so we can be liberated from it. Doesn't mean the issues aren't still there, but I'm not caught in it. I'm not over-identified with it. You follow my point? So this piece, a couple of things that Pema Chodron said. And then you guys are going to separate and connect with each other. And you'll listen to each other for 5 minutes. You'll tell the other person whatever you want to tell them about your pain, your wound, your suffering, your struggle. And you'll be honest with it. And the other person is not going to fix you or cure you or heal you or judge you. They're going to do seven intentions with you and compassion. They're going to be human because they got the same pain. Different story. The same pain and the same suffering. Nurture. Okay. And your natural goodness.
And just to piggyback on that, what was the third thing of the three practices of life?
Three characteristics.
Yeah, three characteristics of life.
Good, thank you. The third is the attachment to self, mine, me and mine. Big self, big problem. Small self, small problem. No self, no problem. So there's impermanence, there's suffering, and you're not really who you think you are. But the more you do, and the more you're identified with that, and the more you're caught in that, you suffer. From a Buddhist perspective. What I like about Buddhism, don't believe a word I'm saying. You sit on your pillow and you decide if what I'm saying is true for yourself. That's what I like about it. I'm a wounded codependent healer trying to fix everybody. And the best way I can do that is get out of your head and leave you alone and teach you how to be with yourself. Saves me from my need to make everybody here better. I'm joking and I'm serious. Because that's the only way you're going to heal anyway, if I get out of your way and give you the tools to do that. So can you realize those things? If you do, maybe you'll let go. Maybe you'll practice compassion. Maybe you will see it with new eyes. Maybe you'll see your struggle as your teacher and think about every time you've healed and learned in life, it's because you struggled and you lost and you had pain. Because the moment in my life still that was the most painful, I'm not going to tell you my whole story, but my father passed away rather suddenly, and there's a whole host of pain associated with that and from his life, and he was a soldier and he suffered from post-traumatic stress, had a whole host of issues, and died on the operating table having bypass surgery. So get the metaphor. What am I doing as a doctor? I don't want anybody to bypass the truth of their pain. That's probably what's going on here, okay? So when he died, I just got broken open, that phrase, because I didn't know all the pain I was carrying. I had no clue, and I couldn't stop crying for, like, forever, right? But it broke me open to a place inside I didn't even know I had, where I had so much pain and suffering from the grief and the loss that I'd been holding on to most of my life up until that point, to also feel my oh, my God, there's like, oh, I can love people. I have this heart that's open, that has the capacity that I never even knew I had, because to stay safe and protect myself, I was like this. I didn't even know I was doing that. You understand my point? This is what Pema Chodron speaks about. All we think we're protecting ourselves by shutting down. We're causing ourselves more suffering in two kinds. Yes.
I know this is a complex subject, but could you touch on briefly the mechanics of attachment, the dynamics, why we get attached to things, right, healthy, unhealthy? Because it sounds in many instances, we are attached to things that are fundamentally not good for us. How does that happen? Is meditation the way to detach?
Well, it happens by conditioning, and it happens by it hurts, and this takes away the pain momentarily, and let me get out. I mean, why do we have horribly, I'm not judging this, painkiller opioid addiction in our culture? Is because, you know, or alcoholism or whatever. No judgment. It's, you know, helps. I mean, the woman that I shared with you with the issue of obesity, she had been molested as a child, and her fat was her friend in protecting her from sexuality in a way that every time she lost weight and nobody had to even do anything, just look at her that way, she wasn't aware it was touching that deep wound. So food and fat became a protector, became serving her in some way, had a secondary gain. And so, you know, all neuroses is a substitute for legitimate suffering. So that's how all of our neuroses start. I was, just in terms of what I shared with you, I was a rebel type. Somebody said, do this, I wanted to do that. They said, do it this way, I wanted to do it that way, right? So the last thing I ever wanted to do is be a doctor or a therapist or anything the way they do it. I wanted to find hopefully no more to be a rebel, but at the time, that was how I survived. That's what got me what I needed. That's why underneath all of our stuff is a part that's trying to help. That's why we don't want to get rid of it. That's why we don't want to judge it, because it's coming from a place that's saying, please love me. At the end, I'll read you the poem of the woman I'm telling you about, because her fat was her friend when she changed her relationship to it. And she stopped hating it and hating herself. She said, oh my God, it's protecting me. It's keeping me safe. It's a buffer. Because we did imagery. She had the image of a down comforter. Okay. And immediately her relationship to it changed from, I hate you, I'm ashamed of you, I can't stand you, to thank you. You've been protecting me, you've been keeping me safe. And I didn't have to tell her, she was aware that there was a part of her that needed protecting. Right? And you've seen that. I mean, all of us have that. And so it's just unraveling our own story and unraveling our own conditioning and putting it together in a mind-body way. You have in my handout, I ask people three questions. Tell me your story. Are you willing to listen to it? And then let's be with it. And then you get well. Mind, body, spirit. Now that's a simplified version of what I've been practicing, studying, integrating my whole career, but that's how I've come up to it. What's my story that I keep telling myself? Is it true or not? How did it happen? Right? Am I willing to listen to the different voices inside that are talking? Now what do? I got to be with it. How? Pain to rain. Compassion. Mindfully. Compassionately. It's not real complicated. And when they study, and I've studied this and work with this, post-traumatic stress of war, what's healing people with PTSD? Yoga, group therapy, support, listening, mindfulness, telling your story, being with the pain, opening to the truth. There are other techniques, depending on the severity and the degree of conditioning, to work with the brain and somatic experiencing and EMDR, and there's a whole host of therapies. But the essence of the therapy of healing is being with another person who says, I see you, I hear you, I love you. It's okay. That's it. That's what I want you to do with each other. Because this is what Gavin said. He then went on to say, it is also important to have someone say, yes, this is terrible. And yes, I validate your experience. Before you jump in there to fix them or judge them or cure them or heal them. Yes, what you're going through is hard. Yes, I validate experience. To unburden myself of the story and the drama and to continue the exploration in a meditative way. That's what I've been teaching you, talking about. And I've decided I needed to talk about it more than do it because it's not so easy just to do it if you don't understand the context of it. I can't imagine dealing with abuse and not having it acknowledged. Because the abuse leaves one so untrusting of oneself and so much in denial of the truth. And this is not a judgment against anybody, but people will have an illness or a thing and they'll come into, not me per se, it's nothing to do with me, and I'll listen to what they're going through. And I just wish that the doctors once would like see a person there and not just tell them, this is what's wrong with you, this is what you got, and I don't know what to do to fix you. And it takes me like so many sessions just to decondition them from the possibility that you can be with it and you can heal it. Because, you know, God told them they didn't know what to do. You understand my point? And not appreciating who they are and how they be and what they've been told and how they relate to it is 90% of a lot of healing of many, many illnesses and wounds. So when you're going to listen to each other and just do that, that's more valuable than if I teach you more meditation techniques. Is that you tell the truth and they hear you. And they say, I hear you. Not in words or just acknowledging that. And that's it. Nothing more. Because we're all, you know, if we can touch that, that's the truth. Now, here's one other piece that is really important for you to understand how I can allow myself to do this, because you don't want to re-traumatize people. You don't want to throw salt on the wound. You have to be sensitive to people's pains and wounds and fears. You have to recognize their resistance, their fear, and all other parts of them. But my view is as following. You've already survived the worst. You've lived through it without choices and without resources. Now you're given some choices and some resources to face it. That can't be worse than what you've already survived as a child or later in life with no resources. No, and you're here. You're in a place where you can talk about it. You can tell the truth about it, not to fix it, not to get rid of it, just to tell the truth about it. And now bring what choice? Face it. Bring mindfulness. Bring compassion. Bring awareness, bring listening. And that's facilitating the choice to end the suffering. Last example. I hope none of you have gone through this, but if you ever go through a divorce, painful. A lot of people avoid that pain and delay the divorce because they don't want to go through the pain. After they go through the divorce, I haven't met anybody that says, I want to go back and marry that person. Every single person says, I wish I got divorced sooner. But I didn't want to go through the pain. You follow my point? So, we're trying to make this hot and sexy. I haven't figured out how. I take all advice on how what I'm teaching you is hot and sexy. Because it's not a big seller. As Jung said, right? Right? You know? Become enlightened by imagining figures of light. Okay, and again, I'm not saying that with judging. I want figures of light too, trust me. But I haven't, they haven't come that way. Okay, so I'm just sharing you the light that's come my way. Okay, enough. Everybody understand what I'm suggesting you do. If you do not want to participate in that, you don't have to. Okay, and whoever you're with, it doesn't really matter. There's no right person.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.